Hi, my name is Mark O'Shea. Born in Boston, lived my whole life in the rock and roll capital of the Cleveland, Ohio. You're listening to today's Boondoggle Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to this intro before the intro of our today's Boondoggle Radio Show. As you know, we're a veteran-owned and operated podcast, and this has been an incredibly therapeutic journey for me as a veteran that struggles with PTSD and anxiety, just getting out and talking to people. But it does cost us some money, so if you feel so obliged to donate to our GoFundMe, we have a GoFundMe under Today's Boondoggle. We also have a Venmo at Today's Boondoggle that you can donate to. Our anchor sponsorship at anchor.fm/today's boondoggle. Any questions, comments, suggestions, complaints, you can email us at todaysboondoggle@gmail.com. And please follow us on our social media sites at Today's Boondoggle on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all your social media platforms, as well as our YouTube channel, our Rumble channel, and our BitChute channel. Please follow, subscribe, comment, and download. And please consider checking out our sponsors. If you support our sponsor, Dream Nutrition, you can receive 10% off your order by using the promo code BOONDOG10 at checkout. So Dream Nutrition, they're a veteran-owned and operated company as well, so please support them and receive 10% off using the promo code BOONDOG10. Thanks for your time, and thanks for listening.
The wait is over. The pinnacle of rock festivals in America, Sonic Temple Art and Music Festival, is back at the heartbeat of rock, historic Crew Stadium in Columbus, Ohio, with the Foo Fighters. It's times like these, Tool. The return of Avenged Sevenfold. Kiss. Rob Zombie, Deftones, Queens of the Stone Age, Godsmack, Chevelle, Falling in Reverse, Pussifer, Beartooth, I Prevail, Jawbreaker, Sublime with Rome, and more. Over 75 bands. We can't wait to see you at Sonic Temple Memorial Day weekend, May 25th through the 28th. Passes on sale this Friday at noon at SonicTempleFestival.com for only $10 down. Foo Fighters, Tool, Avenged Sevenfold, Kiss. The biggest weekend of rock at the best stadium in rock. Sonic Temple Art and Music Festival. We're coming home.
Going on, everybody. It's Bill Bailey with Today's Boondoggle. And real quick housekeeping note, if you're watching us on YouTube or Rumble or BitChute, please hit that follow and subscribe button. If you're listening to us on Spotify or any of the podcast platforms out there, please hit that follow and subscribe button as well. Help us build our numbers and continue to bring you interviews like the ones I'm about to have right now, because Today's Boondoggle is bringing you the answer with Paul Mahon. How you doing, Paul?
I'm good, Bill. Thanks for having me. Nice to be here.
Yeah. Good to have you, man. Not too often I get to talk across the globe with musicians and stuff, but Usually when I have somebody on for the first time, I like to get a little bit of a background. So originally, what did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be a motocross rider, professional motocross was the first thing before music. So I did that for probably from the age of 5 to 12. And then after that, the music took over. I started playing guitar and got into bands and stuff and ended up in The Answer and, you know, did a few records and here we are now.
Nice. So less likely to wreck on stage than you are riding motocross, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. The bones, the bones are stacking me.
Appreciate it more.
Yeah.
And then when was it that, you know, kind of music caught your attention and do you remember some of your early influences?
Music was always present in our house. My father was in a band professionally when he was younger. When I was born, he stopped that. But there was always a lot of music around the house, musicians staying. So I was exposed to it early. And then music for me that I got into, probably the earliest thing was Dire Straits. I remember hearing Money for Nothing, the opening riff to that, and I wanted to play guitar. And then after that, it was things AC/DC, Motley Crue, Metallica, Aerosmith, kind of a lot of sort of late 80s stuff I was really into for a while. Then kind of grunge came along. I liked that too. And I guess I started playing around that time, around sort of 93, 94. And from that, discovered Led Zeppelin and, you know, Eric Clapton and a lot of British blues stuff and 70s rock. And that's kind of more of what my playing style became with The Answer.
Oh, nice. So then, you know, when you first started playing, when did you start forming bands, with some of your friends in school or?
Yeah, the bass player in the Answer, Mickey, I met him when I was 12 and, We started a band a couple of years after that. I was originally playing drums in that and then switched to guitar. And we always kind of played together and wrote songs, even though it was hard to put a band together and get, you know, keep everyone motivated and in the same space. I'd given up on it for when I went to university. I was still studying music, but I thought being in a band and having a career doing that was a bit far-fetched at that stage. But lo and behold, in my class, I met a guy called Cormac Neeson, who became the singer of the band. And kind of just from meeting him, we really hit it off and with great chemistry and never looked back from there.
Oh, nice. So then while you were in university, that's when The Answer came to...
Yeah, yeah. It was actually, I think going back to probably summer 99, we kind of got the nucleus of the band together and written a few songs. And someone actually suggested this guy, Cormac Neeson, would be the perfect singer. And he had gone to Wildwood, New Jersey that summer. So he wasn't in Ireland. We couldn't find him. And just at university, I played in a Brazilian music ensemble every Thursday. And one day I arrived late, there was one chair left and I sat down and the guy beside me gave me a guitar and said, you know, I can't play much. Can you play that? I said, yeah, I play a bit. And got on pretty well with him. And just sort of asked him his name at the end. He said, I'm Cormac. I said, Cormac who? He's Cormac Neeson. I was like, oh, wow. Incredible. Been looking for you for about 4 months. And he's like, okay, why? So we're going to have a band. And he came out that weekend. We rehearsed and, here we are in 2023, still together.
Nice. So it was like a divine appointment, huh?
It was, yeah. Yeah. He was a hard man to find. And it was hard to put the band together at first. It took a few years, but it was worthwhile in the end.
Nice. And then as you started putting that together and then, getting your chemistry and kind of just, gelling as a band, when was it when you guys were ready to start playing out?
It probably took us about 6 months, I think, before we started gigging. And even then, the early shows were pretty, you know, we were flying by the seat of our pants. We probably could have done with another 6 months of rehearsal, but that's how you learn. You get out there and you make mistakes, and then you go back to the rehearsal room, you know what you got to fix and where you got to improve. So we kind of did that, did our first demo EP about a year and a half in, started getting some interest around 2004. We got a manager then from London, and we went over to London that summer, started doing showcase gigs, and ended up with a record deal with Albert Productions, which was originally an Australian label that AC/DC were on. But they also had they had offices in the UK. So we got signed by those guys and did our first record, Rise, 2006. And we did two records with them. And we had three records with Spine Farm, and just on the new album with Golden Robot, and another Australian label. So it's come full circle.
Yeah. And then, like as that started picking up with the record label and management and stuff, I seen that you guys, have toured with quite a few amazing artists, like even including AC/DC, who you mentioned, earlier. Like what was, when you kind of got to that level and you got to like support bands like, Aerosmith and AC/DC, I haven't seen like the Beach Boys, I guess you guys toured with as well.
No, that wasn't us. That would have been my dad. He did some tours supporting the Beach Boys back in the day.
Okay.
We've done some good shows. All the ones you've mentioned, The Who we played with. We did some tours with Whitesnake as well. We were actually in the States in 2015, the summer. We toured with Whitesnake. It was awesome. We've been very lucky with the bands. We got to play with a lot of our heroes, especially AC/DC. That was, you know, over a year. We did the whole Black Ice tour. It was pretty crazy. It was a band I grew up listening to. Angus would have been one of the big influence, one of the earliest influences, and I'd never seen him until the first night we supported them in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. So we did our show, and then I got to watch him and got to for another year, which was quite a treat. But yeah, no, it was awesome touring with all those guys.
Yeah, I had to say, like, you know, I mean, how it sounded like everything kind of came together, you know, originally, but then to get to play with somebody that you've admired, that's influenced you, and you know, you had to be pinching yourself half the time. Like, am I really living this dream come true right now?
Oh yeah, completely. That was a very special time. That was just on our second album. We just finished Everyday Demons, and we were in London in a place called Brixton, and just recording B-sides for the album and, you know, extra tracks. And our record label, A&R guy, took us out for lunch and a few beers. We sort of sat down around the table, and he put four sheets of paper in front of each band member. And, we turned them over, and it was all the dates of the first leg of the AC/DC tour from October to January in America. And we were like, wow, that can't be happening, is it? It was a real, you know, when you're, it was like kids at Christmas kind of thing. When,
oh yeah,
there's that magic in the world, and you know, doesn't happen often, but it was a nice day.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. And then I mean, you named some of the other artists that you got to play with, like The Who, and I mm-hmm. thought I read the Rolling Stones too.
Yeah, we did some shows with the Stones in Europe in 2007. And it's those guys, still amazing, the show they were putting on at that age. It was pretty incredible. Really cool guys as well. Didn't get to hang out with them as much as DC and The Who, but yeah, we got to talk to Keith and Ronnie Wood a little bit and met Mick. So yeah, there's, you know, they're larger than life, but backstage they're pretty down to earth too. But yeah, another great band.
Yeah, and then I mean, like you say, having an opportunity to talk to them, and I guess, you know, like, I mean, what knowledge and stuff you could gain. I'm sure you were taking advantage of like being under that learning tree, you know?
Yeah, of course. But I think with AC/DC, we got to learn the most probably from them because of the, you know, the amount of time we spent. And it was a real kind of lesson in how to make songs work in arenas and stadiums, and how the simple gestures and the more simple music, it seems to work better, you know, for that kind of audience in those spaces. But the, you know, simple but good music is the hardest to write. But those guys were masters at it. We've tried occasionally successful, but not as often as they are. But still a lot I learned from them.
Yeah, and then you know, I saw that, you know, you guys had that run quite a few years successful. Tours like that and albums, but then like there came a time where you guys had to take a break. Like, what was that? Care to elaborate on that,
yeah,
that time period, what was going on?
Well, that was kind of, we'd done 6 albums by that stage, and kind of it was, I think people were starting to get a little bit disillusioned with the industry, and obviously we'd I think we kind of hit the top of the mountain on our third record, Revival. And then things were going downhill after that. Not drastically, but just, you know, a little bit. You'd sell, you know, fewer records. There wouldn't be as many people come to the shows. And the industry was changing a lot. And it kind of felt like maybe our time was done. We had a good run at it. And you know, everyone in the band had kids by that stage, so families were becoming quite important. And yeah, it ended up where we could have done another record after Solace, which was the last album we did, but it would have been, you know, kind of playing smaller venues in the back of a van again, and I don't think we didn't have the appetite for it anymore. So it was time to take a break. Cormac did a solo record. I just had my first child. I moved to France. So there was a lot of things going on, and I moved into doing some more production work and mixing, some songwriting with other people, and did that. It was a quieter life for a while. And yeah, I thought the answer was done. I didn't think we would do any more records, and I was quite happy with, you know, a quieter life. And then I got a call out of the blue, just kind of the end of 2019. Manager phoned up and said, we've got an offer of a record deal from an Australian label, and it's pretty good opportunity again if you want to do it. I think there could be some interest in the band again. So we got together, and you know, everyone was recharged, I think, from the break, and kind of missed the band and realized how good we had it before. And I mean, things have changed a lot, and we've changed with them. So we kind of thought we'd come back and try and, you know, put the things right we were doing wrong before, and keep going, keep this thing going. And that led to us doing the new record, Sundowners.
Yeah. Now, I saw you guys made your like official like comeback. Mm-hmm. With the Planet Rock Festival.
Yeah.
You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's we've played that festival a few times. I think maybe 2014 actually was the last time, so it was a little bit of a break. And yeah, it was the first time we played together, I think, in 5, almost 6 years. We were a little bit rusty, kind of. We did sort of some new songs, just 3 new songs, so the old muscle memory could come back about halfway through, and we could play all the old songs. And yeah, it was kind of a surreal experience just to be back with everyone on stage again, and back in front of an audience. We were a bit rusty, but we, you know, we got to it in the end, and it certainly whet the appetite for the tour coming up in March and April and the summer festivals. So, you know, we can't wait to get back out there. It's definitely, I think playing live was a big part of my life that I've missed for 5 or 6 years, and I'm looking forward to doing that again.
Yeah. So your manager approaches you back in 2019, you know, with this opportunity on the label. You guys decided to get back together and have all these plans to get back out on the road and everything. And then the world decides to shut down. Like, what was that like for you guys?
Yeah, that was kind of, I thought, oh my God, here we go again. We're back and that's it. Cause I think we had, before the world shut down, we'd two sessions together, writing new songs, and we all live in different parts of the world now. Two of the guys are still in Ireland. We've got one in London and I'm in Paris. So it takes a bit of organizing to get us all together. But we got together and we're starting to, I think we'd written 3 or 4 songs that we were all pretty excited about and the label was excited about. And then, you know, the lockdown came and we thought that's it. And I'm sure like everyone, we didn't know if the world was going to open up again. And if it did, would there still be music? What would venues be like? Would we still have money to make this album? Or, you know, maybe that opportunity has flown. But we hung in there and we kind of, it was a different experience to keep writing through it, because we're a band, we kind of thrive on being in the same room together and having the chemistry. And that's how we first wrote songs, just jamming and, you know, sort of taking the best bits and refining it. And then that kind of, you know, that inspires all the other stuff when you go off and write by yourself, and it inspires the direction you're going to take. And when you take that away, it's kind of, it feels like you have nothing. But we started writing just individually. We'd meet up on Zoom once a week and sort of exchange ideas and take them away and work on them further. And we only had, I think in end of summer 2020, we got together for a week and demoed some new tracks. And then again, there was another sort of lockdown after that. So it was another year before we got together again. It was another week. We demoed more tracks. And then we went in and did the album. So it was a very different experience to how we've worked before, where, you know, for certainly first 10 years, we would see each other 5 days a week and, you know, we'd be writing or rehearsing or, you know, doing something for the band. So it was a really, really different experience, but it kind of, I think we were more focused in the songwriting because you had to make the most of the time you had. And I think, you know, the songs are a little bit tighter, more focused. The style, I think, over the 10, 11 tracks is, you know, it doesn't diverge as much as it used to do. And I think it, you know, what was a bad experience at the beginning turned out to be, you know, there's a silver lining to it. And, you know, I prefer being with everyone together more often, but it showed me it can be done that way if it ever happens again.
Yeah. I
hope not, though.
Yeah, I agree. And then, like, I mean, how much, so you guys were in the process of writing Sundowners during that, how mm-hmm. much did that experience like kind of influence your writing?
It did a lot. I think another thing it offered was, I think everyone had the chance to put more of their idea into it. Rather, you know, sometimes when you're in the same room, it can be, you know, hard. Everyone's shouting over each other. And, you know, sometimes you don't get to put the idea across fully. Whereas this time we all had the opportunity to write lyrics and, you know, come up with melodies and stuff and put that forward. And, yeah, things like No Salvation, that was kind of written during lockdown. And the, you know, the desperation of the time certainly influenced the lyrics on that. And I think like Blood Brothers was a celebration of us all being back together and being able to get out of lockdown and you know, get back into the light again. So it was, yeah, definitely had a big influence on the lyrics on the album for sure.
And then let's talk about like the single "Want You to Love Me." Mm-hmm. What's the message with that behind that song?
That's just good old fashioned throwaway rock, and you know, you got to take us as we are, and you know, we're not trying to be something else anymore. We're the answer. We know who we are, and you know, you got to deal with it. So nothing too introspective there. That was done before the lockdown. That was the first things we did
together.
Yeah. It's more loud and proud and less, you know, less kind of introspective and dark.
And then that whole process, I'm sure, you know, kind of was helping keep your sanity by still being able to write and create during all that uncertainty. Almost therapeutic, huh?
It sure was, yeah. It was life-changing in some ways as well, because I found my son was, he was two at the time. So having a two-year-old in the house all day, we could only go out for 1 hour. It's quite tough for them. It's quite tough on the parents too. So the only time I could write or make music was in the morning, really. So I'd have to get up at, you know, 5, 6 o'clock, sort of get the guitar out and, you know, plug in the headphones, try and be quiet. And that was the only way I could write songs. Usually I would stay up to 5 or 6 and then go to sleep. But this kind of flip things around, and I actually got to really enjoy it and get up to the birds rather than stay up to hear the birds sing. It was quite a good change for the better.
Yeah, I can relate to those days. And I saw that. And then speaking of, like, you know, days of getting up when the birds are chirping and it's not a beautiful sound, because I know how I used to be back in the day, like to throw them down and stay out late. You know, I have some Irish in my family ancestry too. And it would show on those weekends out with my friends. But my birthday is actually March 16th. I was born an hour before St. Patrick's Day.
Okay.
But on those days back in the day, you know, I'd see, you know, it'd be like, you know, I'd be out celebrating my birthday. Got to throw some down for my birthday. The next day is the hair of the dog celebrating, you know, St. Patrick's Day here in the States and stuff. But speaking of St. Patrick's Day, you guys, did you plan this on purpose for the Sundowners to be released on St. Patrick's Day this year?
No, it was just kind of, it was fortunate. I think this album, originally we were hoping it was going to come out probably summer 2020 was the original before the lockdown. So it just kept getting put back, but it's, I guess again, kind of serendipity. It's ended up coming out on St. Patrick's Day and full circle yet again. So yeah, we'll have one for St. Patrick and we'll have one for your birthday too. And one for the album. So there's plenty of excuses to go back to the old days.
Nice. And then for the audience, you want to explain like exactly what the title means, Sundowners?
Well, Sundowners, it's I think it came from an idea Mickey had from a, I'm not sure it was a book he was reading, and he just put it forward as a song title, and Cormac took it, and for him, it was kind of like an old kind of like the hippie festivals of the late 60s and early 70s, like the first Glastonbury of these festivals, you know, during summer solstice that just went on into the night and the next day and the week. And it's like the sun never went down. And, you know, that's kind of, it became a metaphor for the band and the comeback as well. Like the, you know, the sun's never going to go down on the answer, no matter how dark it gets.
Oh, nice. I like that. And then while you guys were working on this album, you guys worked with British rock producer Dan Weller. What was that experience like for everyone?
Oh, no, Dan was great. He's kind of, if you look at the sort of the bands he's produced, it's more from the heavier sort of metal end of the spectrum, and you wouldn't initially put Dan Weller and the Answer together as producer and band, but we talk to a lot of people, and just Dan seemed to have a really good vision of what the records could and should be. And we kind of talked to him about things we liked from previous albums we'd done and what we didn't like and what we'd like to try and change and fix on this. And he seemed to really get it. And he had some really cool ideas for what guitar tones we were gonna use for the drum sounds. And just from talking to him again, because it was still kind of lockdown when we were planning this, we could only talk to him over Zoom. We didn't meet him until the first day of recording, which again is a different experience from us. Usually we have 2-3 weeks of pre-production before an album. You really get to know the producer and bond with them, and when you get in the studio, there are no surprises. But this was kind of, the sense of jeopardy, but he turned out to be just as cool as we thought he would be. And it's kind of one of the best guys for managing the whole situation of a record, because there's so many things you have to balance, like from the songs, the performances, the actual recording, and just the atmosphere, how everyone's getting on. And it's it can be difficult to, some guys are great with the songs, some guys are great engineers, and some guys are great with people. It's rare you get someone that has the whole, the whole mix. And he's one of those guys. And just, he's a guitar player as well. So we got on very well. He's, it got me playing in a different way, kind of. Like, the whole album was tracked live to tape, 16-track tape machine, which we've never done before. We tracked the drums to tape before, but never the whole band. So you had to be, you had to be on it. There's very little fiction you can do in Pro Tools. So we kind of do 3-4 takes, and then we take a break, because you'd have to rewind the tape and start again. And you would have to pick which take it was going to be, because there was only really one set of tape. So it would be 15 minutes. And it had a real nice kind of, real nice vibe, where you'd be really focused for those 3-4 takes, and then you have a break, and you'd have to be on it again. Whereas sometimes when you're tracking in Pro Tools, it's never ending. It's just, guitars on guitars on guitars, and you can get lost in a little bit. But this was, it was very live, very relaxed, but it still had an edge to it. Even I remember we did the first 3 tracks, and I went into the control room and said to him, okay, I'll change the strings now. When are we going to start tracking for real? He's like, no, we've done 3 songs. I didn't even know we were doing it for real. Like, I haven't changed my strings. These have been on for about 6 months. He's like, no, sounds fine. You can change them now if you want. But you've got 3 songs done. You're not doing them again. it was very relaxed to get me to commit to that as well. So he has something about him. And I think at the end of the album, the biggest compliment you can pay any producer is to say, I'd like to do the next album with him again. And I can say that about Dan. I'd love to do the next Answer album with him too.
That's awesome. And then, so then that's, as we said, March 17th this year, St. Patrick's Day, that's going to come out, Golden Robot Records.
Yeah.
And, we had mentioned that, you grew up, your father was a musician. So music's been a part of your entire life, your entire journey, and now doing, a couple of years under your belt, getting your own experience out there. I mean, you're pretty much like a veteran now in the music world, but is there anything out there that still like surprises you to this day?
I've seen, you kind of feel you've seen it all by now. But there's always something that surprises you. I guess kind of at the moment, the state of the music industry is kind of surprising. I was even thinking, after we kind of caught what I would say is the last sort of wave of what the old record industry was, you know, where you get a record deal and you make an album and you tour and, you know, maybe you'll get on the radio, you do some press and you might get some traction and get some success. And then streaming, and like iTunes came along, streaming came along, social media came along, and that really changed the game. And then since we've been away, like we stopped 2017, and now I've come back, and just the influence of social media on the promotion of music and the industry is unbelievable now. It's kind of it's become much more important than the music, I think. Which is, I'm still getting my head around it and how to approach it. I do find it pretty crazy. I'm not sure what to make of it all, but well, hopefully over this album we'll have a better idea of it. And I would like things to go back to a little bit how it used to be.
Yeah, but, I've always been old school. I like, for when it came to collecting albums or CDs, you know, I like to have something solid. I always enjoyed checking out the artwork, you know, reading the lyrics and the liner notes and all that stuff. And then, you know, that you kind of get robbed of that with streaming. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't get to take you on that journey. And I've been liking the labels and people that have been pushing vinyl back out and stuff like that.
Yeah. I think that fortunately, I think vinyl is making a genuine comeback, and has been for, you know, quite a few years now. I remember our first record we did, there wasn't even, you know, any talk of putting it out on vinyl at all. It was seen to be, you know, a pointless format at that time. And we did a few singles just on 7-inch vinyl, it was limited edition. And I think the next album we did some vinyl, but it was just limited edition, because again, it wasn't, people seen it as being too expensive. No one buys it, no one cares. And then now it's kind of, it's the first format that we make of this album is the vinyl. And I think we have, there's maybe three or four different versions of it, like different gatefold, different sleeves, different colored vinyls, you know, different bonus tracks and stuff. And the CD's kind of left behind now. But and people probably from sales of vinyl is where most of the money will be made for bands like us now, which is, you know, that's kind of cool too. That's not so bad.
Yeah. And like what you were saying with social media, like I'm still trying to wrap my head around that too. It's like, if I want, you know, to get, you know, more interviews, you know, on my podcast and stuff, the labels look at that. Well, what kind of following do you got? You know, what kind of, you know, so it's like, you got to kind of produce content constantly, you know, and build up your numbers and get people wanting to, what do you offer that these other people aren't offering and stuff. And it's like, I'm getting ready to turn 50 here in a couple months. So it's like, you know, teaching old dog new tricks. And I'm trying to ask my kids, like, hey, how do I, you know, build this thing up, you know?
No, I'm exactly the same. We came back and, you know, we had meetings about promotion and stuff for this album. And it was all, what content are you going to make? Like, you have to give guitar lessons. I'm going to do like a series where I talk about influential films and stuff. And, you know, we're doing like vinyl albums of the week. There's all stuff like that, which is fun. But, you know, I'm glad there's still guys like yourself that, you know, we could do interviews like this. And that's a, you know, much, much more enjoyable way of promoting the album and bringing it to people for me.
Yeah, exactly. To have the conversation. What I try and do is like, you know, yeah, there's the standard questions I need to ask about the publicist. So, hey, you got to talk about make sure you plug the album and, you know, all that stuff. But I like to get to know the people behind it. Like, what makes them tick? What led you to be, you know, where you're at today? And, you know, what have you overcome, you know, stuff like that. And I think, you know, fans would appreciate a peek behind the curtain, you know, when I talk to people. That's the approach I try and do, at least. I don't know, you know, make it more fun. Like, you're just, you know, having are relaxed, more relaxed. Like you're having a conversation. You don't have to perform for me or anything, you know, just like, just let's talk, you know?
Yeah, no, it's the best way to do it. I think I enjoy it too.
And then, what kind of goals do you have, for, you know, not just the answer, but, for, you know, yourself going forward?
Well, I think just getting this record done and get the band back together was kind of one of the big goals and something I thought would never happen. So I'm very happy to have achieved that. Yeah, I'm just really looking forward to getting out and playing live again and, you know, being able to hopefully play better than I did before. You're always kind of, you always want to play better and feel you've done better than, you know, the last gig or the last album. And I think my position now in life with the experience I have, I think I can do that. So I'm just really looking forward to getting out there and playing those shows again. And we're going to, looking forward to getting on the festivals in the summer. And I would just hopefully the album's still alive come September and we can take it to the States and I'd love to get back over to America and play again. It's been a while. So that's kind of one of the goals for me before the end of the year.
Nice. And then, you know, you kind of mentioned, you know, a lot of your earlier influences when we were talking earlier, but I want to ask you some of the questions I normally ask guests that are on. Who would you, and I know it's a tough one for musicians, definitely, but who are your top three musical artists?
Oh, that's a tough one. Go for the Beatles would be number one, I think. Just for, I think, the breadth of material they put out in such a short time, you know, coming from those kind of really early rock and roll roots to when they, you know, they really hit their stride from kind of Rubber Soul to Abbey Road is, you know, incredible amount of music and songwriting and production all in those records, which I love. Number two, I would have Van Halen, because again, kind of songwriting, I would say almost on par with the Beatles, but with probably, you know, maybe the greatest guitar player we ever had the pleasure to see and hear, and one of the most amazing drummers and frontmen, and with Michael Anthony, he just kind of held it all together and you know, made it tick, amazing backing vocals. And yeah, just again, another I love with Van Halen, they kind of, from Van Halen 1, my two favorite records of them would be Van Halen 1 and 84, but then just all the stuff in the middle, it's just a real treat as well to listen to. But those two records were just so focused, and you know, it's all killer, no filler. And then probably number three, I would have Prince, was another, again, amazing guitar player and incredible writer with just, you know, real sort of breadth of material across his career.
Nice. And then has there been a song that's like been like a go-to for you, like whenever you, you know, need some inspiration or, you know, pick me up? Is there a particular song that's your go-to for that?
It's a tricky one. It's, let me think. It's probably quite a few. I think probably one song, if I'm ever down, or you know, you need to get a party started, or just need a little pick me up, I always put on "Dance the Night Away" of Van Halen 2. I think that's the song can always puts a smile on my face. Love hearing that one.
Oh yeah, that's definitely a good one. And then you talked a little bit about, you know, it being in university and everything, you know, and everything you learned there, but is there a particular class you feel should be mandatory for kids today before, you know, finishing school and going off into the world?
That's a good one. I think there's probably a lot of different things we could do with education. I think that could be improved. I can think of three things. Probably one, I think the way music education is, I think we could change that and make it more accessible and more enjoyable for kids. I think when I grew up and I was learning music, it was very, kind of classical music was the way you learned music, and it was very, it was not the most fun, and it didn't really relate to the music you liked. So I think some sort of music like appreciation and songwriting, where kids can see how songs are put together, and we can show them that anyone can write a good song, and they can too, and get them writing as sooner rather than later. And I also think some sort of way of mindfulness, some kinds of meditation and stuff like that. I think if we can expose kids to that a bit earlier, that could help them in later life too. And I'm a big when the band stopped, I was really got into jiu-jitsu, Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Oh, nice.
And I got a lot of, I made a lot of friends and learned a lot about myself, how far I can push myself if I put my mind to it, and what you can achieve. So I think some sort of self-defense thing like that for kids and teenagers can be very helpful can help with your anger, with your if you have any confidence issues, if you're any depression, things like that. I think it can really there's things you can do that I find it's you can really go to the edge in a safe environment and learn a lot about yourself. And I've got learned a lot from that, and something I really enjoy doing too.
Yeah, it's awesome that you mentioned that, because I myself train jiu-jitsu, and I started, been doing it a couple of years now, and and my 19-year-old daughter does it with me as well, and see her growth and how much she's come into her own with self-confidence, and she does competitions. I'm afraid. I'm old. I'm brittle. I'd rather roll with my friends, and I'm already, people I feel comfortable with. I mean, I'd like to get one out of the way, but at some point. But as I mentioned earlier, it's like I used to do a lot of partying, especially around my birthday and St. Patrick's Day and stuff. Well, I'm 13 years sober now, and got out of the military, and you get sober, and then you're like, okay, how do I be a normal human being? What was I trying to hide from before? What were things that I wasn't addressing? So like, I got out of the military, I'm sober, and then I'm just like, then I had to feel all this stuff, and I kind of like isolated. I had low self-worth, self-confidence, got out of, let myself get out of shape. And, thankfully I got a friend that runs a training facility by the house, and got with him a couple of years ago. And now it's like, like you said, I'm pushing myself again. I got gaining my own self-confidence. I was just having a talk with him earlier. I'm like, well, I guess I'm finally getting it now at like 50 years old. He's like, well, better late than ever. I'm like, yeah, I agree. And it's like, I'm not that great at it, but what it's taught me is everything, like you said, how much I am capable of. And the beautiful part of the journey is like the relationships you make. And I get to sit and watch my daughter excel and grow, So it's definitely highly recommend everybody do it. And I've seen a lot of kids that have come through my friend's school, RTSC training here in the Cleveland area, that, have are now solid characters out ready for the world, you know, to that they might have came from a bad situation. And, you know, now to see what this sport has done for so many people, myself included, I can't give enough shout outs to the jiu-jitsu community. So I'm glad you brought that up, man.
Yeah, no, it's kind of similar to what you're saying. Like when the band stopped for me, it was kind of, how do I replace that? You know, the buzz of getting on stage, of having a goal to work towards, to, you know, the camaraderie, kind of all that was kind of gone. I was in a foreign country, didn't speak the language, didn't really know anyone. And the dojo kind of became somewhere where, you know, I learned to speak the language, made some new friends, and, you know, you have goals just to work towards, and it's addictive too in a good way. And,
yeah.
It's great to see, like, even how big jiu-jitsu is becoming now since, you know, the last 4 or 5 years. It's an awesome sport, awesome pastime. Love it.
Yeah, it's like, you know, what kept me out of it was my own low self-confidence and my own, like, projection of what the environment was going to be, or comparing myself to the young athletes. Like, man, I wish I would have got this. Yeah, and I do wish I would have got into it at a younger age and stuff. But, you know, what's great about the community, at least definitely at my school, is it's like they just want you to come in and do the best you can. And everybody's there to help build you up. And they just, you know, try and be a little bit better today than you were yesterday. You know, don't compare yourself. I'm in there with the young, you know, studs, and I'm worried I'm going to get my arms torn off. And, you know, I spent a lot of time in an ice bath now too, because of it, but I learned to enjoy that. But, you know, it was like getting out of my head and just, you know, knowing that I'm giving what I have for today. And, it, you know, I can't compare myself to these people. We all come from different, you know, walks of life, different age brackets, you know, my issues from the military or whatever, you know, but everybody wants to see you do well and build you up. And it's a pretty tight community. And you know, like you said, without the band, when I got out of the military, all I knew was that culture, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, okay, how do I connect with a new tribe? And this has been like my new, you know, tribe, basically, you know?
Yeah.
And then three people who've inspired you, or you could credit for making you the person you are today.
Ooh. That's a tricky one. I'll have to say, I guess both my parents, I'll put in there. I guess especially my mother, because she was the one, she took me to all those guitar lessons back in the day. Got me my first guitar, and, kept me going that way, which was very important. And my father, obviously he gave me a lot as well with the music. And also, I think he kind of tried to discourage me a little bit from doing it, because he had been there and kind of, he knew the pitfalls of it, and maybe thought I wasn't cut out for it. But in a way, from him trying to, you know, push me away from it, it pulled me in further, and but it worked out. Trying to think who else. Think probably as another musician I greatly admire, Steve Vai, again, someone who, even obviously I love his music. You may not hear so much of it in the answer, but his massive influence early on for me, and just in the way, you know, the way he would excel, and the work rate he has for the guitar and music, and you know, kind of always trying to push the envelope and better himself. That was kind of, even just being a fan from afar, that always rubbed off on me too, and I got a lot of inspiration from that. Then I guess, again, for the third one, I'm going to kind of cheat and say the other three guys in the band, because, you know, they've kind of probably as much as anyone helped me get where I am today. And we shared all the good times and the bad times together. And, you know, 20 or 23 years later, we're still doing it and going to do it some more.
Awesome. Awesome. And then are there any causes or organizations that you support and encourage others to check out?
I guess any sort of jiu-jitsu school in your local area, I'd urge you to support and check out. And I think it could be something there for you. Can't think of any other organizations off the top of my head.
Yeah, there I interviewed I forget where he's like the CFO of this organization called We Defy. Mm-hmm. And it's here in the States, and it helps veterans that are transitioning out of the military, you know, get a scholarship, their first year scholarship at a jiu-jitsu school.
Yes. Yeah. And, I've seen that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I interviewed him on here and stuff too. And it's definitely something that I'm grateful for, what it's been doing for me and my family right now, you know, so I definitely highly recommend. I've been actually talking to some other musician friends that have been in similar, you know, that downtime from playing, you know, and getting antsy. And I'm like, dude, look into jiu-jitsu. I'm telling you, man, it's like, it's a whole new thing. So I've been encouraging a lot of, you know, people to check it out, man. So
yeah,
that was good to hear. And hopefully if you do come back to the States and you happen to play the Cleveland area, we can get a couple roles in at our school here.
Oh yeah, for sure. I'd love that. Cleveland, awesome city as well. I've played there a few times back in the day. Been to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So, hopefully we'll be back in Cleveland before the end of the year, and we'll get a few roles in.
Yeah, for sure. And then this one will take you back to childhood again, but I always like asking, it's a popular question on here. Favorite toy as a child?
Favorite toy as a child? I think I had a car, but like a fire chief's car with a siren on top. And when it moved, the siren would go and wheel. I remember getting that. It was one of my favorite toys. And of course, the obligatory kids guitar as well.
Nice. Well, that's about all the questions I got for you, Paul, man. I really appreciate, you know, you taking the time and having this conversation with me. And for any fans out there that may be unfamiliar with that are searching for the answer, where would you send them?
I guess the best place to check us out or get in touch would be on Facebook or Instagram, and that is The Answer Rock. So if you go on there, you can check out some videos, some music, and if you know, you leave any messages, we'll get back to you, and we'll keep you up to date with all things Answer and new record. Any new singles are going to drop soon. So yeah,
help these guys build up their social media, because that's what moves records these days. We gotta help each other out.
Yeah, so, it sure is.
Follow The Answer on Instagram and Facebook. And then before I let you go, you mind doing me one last favor?
Of course, yeah.
Cut a promo ID for the show. Just introduce yourself, and you're listening to today's Boondoggle.
Okay. Hey, this is Paul from The Answer, and you're listening to today's Boondoggle.
Awesome. Paul, thank you so much again for your time, man. It was really good getting to know you, and hope you do make it to Cleveland so we can get some of those roles in.
Yeah, for sure. Really appreciate it, Bill. Thanks for you taking the time as well. And you know, all the best for the podcast. I wish you all the success in the world, and hopefully we'll hit Cleveland soon. We'll keep doing it, and I'll look forward to meeting you someday.
All right. Take care, man.
Okay, man. Thanks very much.
All right, bye-bye.
All the best.
So I wander once again into the dust, just trying to find some loving people I can trust. And I still believe in the man behind the face. I just need to find a path that I can trace. I want you to love me like I'm a slave to your life. And I need you to love me just like a whale.
Here at today's Boondoggle, and the name is Dream Nutrition. So if you're looking to empower your human vitality, well then you come to the right place. With over 12 years of combined experience in cannabinoids and terpene products, Dream Nutrition products include CBD oils, patches, proteins, and so much more. The endocannabinoid system is believed to have involvement in regulating physiological and cognitive processes, including the immune system, appetite, pain sensation, mood, memory, and in mediating the pharmacological effects of cannabis. Support this veteran-owned and operated company today, and today's Boondoggle fans will receive 10% off their orders when using the promo code BOONDOG10 at checkout. That's B-O-O-N-D-O-G-10 at checkout. So go to the link. That's dreamnutrition.com/discount/boondog10. And remember, dream is not spelled like Dream Daddy. It's spelled D-R-E-E-M. And start saving today because you deserve to feel your best. And you know that's right. So tell them Dream Daddy and your friends from Today's Boondog sent you.
Thank you for tuning into this week's Today's Boondoggle. Domain Cleveland Entertainment is a veteran-owned and operated cornucopia of nonsensical shenanigans. You can find interesting interviews, music news and information, and just about everything else in between. Thank you again for supporting, sharing, and tuning into Today's Boondoggle.